Welcome to My Big Safety Challenge, a podcast all about stories of safety leadership, presented by Dale Carnegie and the Board of Certified Safety Professionals.
John, as you can see, we just have such a variety of different guests that come in, and different people who see things from different angles and their experiences, and we're the ones in our listeners that have the chance to benefit from hearing from them. And our guest today will give us a different perspective from her experiences that will be of a help to all of us. And you've known this person for some time.
Yeah, this is somebody that I'm excited to talk to. And, somebody that I admire from a safety perspective, and that no matter where she is, success follows. So excited to welcome Shelley Baber to the podcast. She's currently the director at Eaton for EHS. And so welcome, Shelley.
Thank you.
And
happy to be here.
As we get started, talk a little to us about your journey into EHS.
Absolutely.
Did you aspire, like when you were a little kid, to say, that's what I want to be when I get big?
I did not. Not at all.
So how in the world did you get here?
Yeah.
That's a first for this podcast.
Yeah. I was what you'd call a smart kid growing up. I loved science and math. And so therefore, I needed to be a doctor. And so right away, I knew I loved helping people. I loved science and math. And I wanted to have a great job and make a decent amount of money. So from a very young age, I knew I was destined to be a doctor. So much so that my undergrad degree that I went into is in biology. And about a half to three quarters of the way through, I started volunteering in the emergency room at night on a college campus, and immediately realized I cannot see people in pain or bleeding or hurting. And I said, oh, shoot. So what am I going to do now?
What's next?
This kind of just made me realize everything I thought I ever wanted to be is not. So I realized I was too far gone in my degree, in my mind anyway. So I finished it out. And then actually the summer of my junior into senior year, I started working summers in a chemical plant with my dad. And my dad is one of those people who does not have a college degree. He came out and started working in plants right out of high school, worked his way up through every position, and spent a lot of time in a safety role as well. And so he had talked about it quite a bit. But then when I started working in the chemical plants in the summers, he connected me to work with some folks who were working in safety and environmental. And through that, they said, hey, you realize there are degrees in this and full-time jobs in this, and you do nothing but basically ultimately help people. And the light bulb went off. I'm like, are you really? And so I started digging in, learning more about it. And then for my master, switched over at West Virginia University, go Ears, for all of you WVU grads out there, and fellow CSPs or looking to get your certifications. Went into safety and environmental management and then found my true passion, and here I am.
Now, I think it's interesting, Shelley, because we use the term sometimes, or some people do, that they want to go into a helping profession. And I'm not sure that we always connect that idea with doing the safety work. How do you see?
You're right.
Make those obvious connections for us about a helping profession is what you do.
Yeah. And early on, that's where, and you're right. And early in my mind, that's where my head was with it. But I think as you grow in your career, there are times where you feel like you're helping people in the peaks, and that probably in some of the valleys of this profession, you wonder, am I really helping anybody? Am I making an impact? Especially when, if there are unfortunate events that happen, and if people feel like, oh my gosh, well, where was the safety person? Are you failing if an event happens? Versus when you have those peaks and everything is going really well, do they often look to the safety person to say, you did this or you contributed to this? Not always. So I think it's something that inside of yourself, you have to realize that all of your efforts are for the good and betterment of people. And regardless of what you see moment to moment, that you are truly impacting lives. And I think what you also have to come to grips in reality with is you have no idea how many lives you've saved, or the course of their actions, or the course of their career, or decisions they've made. You have no idea how much you've really impacted. You're really lucky in this career if you do get those little nuggets where people come back to you and say, because you said this, or because you did that, I did this. And if you ever get that, give yourself a high five and a pat on the back, because it doesn't happen very often, unfortunately. I wish it happened more, but.
Yeah. And let me go one more layer on this too. First of all, not only are you helping people within that work environment, but the folks who are listening to this, they have no idea the continued effect when people go home to their families and say, now, wait a minute, you know, we probably all think twice before we climb up on that ladder. And it sets a pace for their families. And so we're developing a legacy.
Absolutely.
When we do this work.
And it's funny you say that word, because I have some discussions with our leadership team and our EHS team, and I ask them that question. What do you want your legacy to be? And are you living your life and operating within your career to lead you towards what you hope that legacy is? And if so, outstanding. That's what we want to do. If not, how can you pivot? How can you course change, make a few little tweaks to work towards that?
Which makes getting up in the morning and going to work and sometimes facing some of the challenges gives it more meaning and purpose. Now, one other thing, there are folks that are listening to you on this podcast and they say, whoa, I would like to be the person on the podcast. I mean, that just happens.
I thought you were going to say they hear a little bit of an accent coming out.
Well, I would hope they would. The way real people talk. But at the same time, they're experiencing these ups and downs and all. And I think it's easy for folks to think, oh, somebody that gets on a podcast, they wouldn't experience that. Could you just talk a little bit for our listeners, just to encourage them that that is life. That is the way it works for a safety professional. Thrill of victory, agony of defeat at times. Tell us a little bit.
Absolutely. And if you're a safety professional who goes your entire career with nothing but peaks, outstanding, and you are a unicorn. But unfortunately, in my career, which now is heading towards about 25 years now, or maybe it is, there definitely have been some low points. I've unfortunately had to work through multiple fatalities. People that I directly knew, some who I didn't know directly, but nonetheless, the impact is the same. I saw I got goosebumps right now just thinking about it. Going through that, you know, there are moments I can remember, you know, going home to my house at night and sitting with my husband, sometimes when I would only be home for 2 hours of sleep and then need to get back to keep working through supporting the team. And let me back up for a minute. So When those bad things happen, it seems like in this profession, you're not only the one helping to support the fact-finding and the event reviews, but it seems like in this position, you're the person trying to rally the troops, trying to be there to care for everybody else in the moment, while also trying to do your job with it. You're trying to keep everyone else raised. It just feels that way. I don't know, John, if that's how it's been for you before, but it's kind of a unique position in safety and health where, at least through my experience, that you're trying to be the person that raises everybody else up when in that moment you may really need that yourself and you're feeling quite low. So in those moments when I've gone through those experiences, I've made sure to, you know, nowadays I call people like John. You have to make sure you develop partnerships, friendships, trusted advisors that you can go to and just let everything out, because you certainly can't take it all on yourself. And then you have to be able to tell yourself, you know, this is not your fault. This is a horrible thing that happened. We're in an extremely low moment. but this is not your fault. And, you know, we need to find a way to continue to rise back up, make sure everyone else rises back up, and keep putting one foot in front of the other, and making sure that, yes, this never happens again, but being able to carry on and get back to those moments that, you know, we can smile again about.
So here's what I would say is that to come back to that is, for those of you that are listening, you think about it almost as if like a Google review is kind of how I liken it to. And so when things are going well, you typically don't see reviews, right? But when things are going bad, that's when it's almost prompting you to leave a review of how terrible your service was or whatever you might be experiencing. And so I want to come back, and in that feedback loop that we always seek doesn't always get filled in this profession. To your point around, you may not know who you're impacting. And so, you know, you mentioned, Shelley, about helping people and just knowing you and that heart that you have for that. Talk a little bit about, to the audience, helping people comes in different forms. And so you're serving different people. So there's this evolution of helping. Some folks you're educating. Some folks you're empowering. Some folks you're counseling and helping them through, you know, emotional events. And so it's almost like this Swiss Army knife of help, right?
Absolutely.
And so has that been your experience as you've been working through this field?
Absolutely. And you know, for me, that's one of the things that I personally love about this profession is, you know, I'm not the type of person that can just sit behind a desk or a computer all day long, and you get to hone a variety of different skill sets, flex a lot of different muscles, work with a lot of different people. And typically in this profession, you are impacting from the front line, and, you know, depending on where you are in your career or your journey or your tenure, you may not feel like you could impact all the way up to the CEO or the C-suite, but you absolutely can. So if you don't realize that, you know, I encourage you to come to that realization that we get to influence, often without authority, all levels of individuals within an organization. And there aren't too many professions that operate in that,
range.
So that's
another different people you can reach out to.
Absolutely. So I think, you know, back to your question about, you know, maybe different levels of people or different ways of helping. You know, when you start really early in your career, you often come out with this bravado and, you know, I want to show how much I learned and how many OSHA regulations I know. And I'm going to go find all the things that are wrong. And probably a lot of us go through that right when we're coming out and get that first full-time job. I know I did. And especially being a female and in an all-male, mainly an all-male world, you know, I felt like I kind of had an even bigger hill to climb in the moment anyway. But I think you go through this transition period of, even when you're younger or less tenured, wanting to teach everybody around you and show them what you know. But really, when you get into mid-career or kind of where I am, kind of, you know, middle heading into late career, you know, I find such enjoyment in being able to teach all levels in all different ways. So now for me, it's definitely having a passion to mentor and develop and educate the next generation of safety professionals coming up. But also, every individual that I have an interaction with, if there's a way that I can influence or impact or drop a little nugget to get them to think a little bit differently, that's exactly what I want to do. And sometimes that's about safety and health topic, you know, how they can better demonstrate that they have a value for safety, how they can better demonstrate their commitment to what types of questions they ask. Hey, here's a way you might consider tweaking that just slightly. And sometimes the light bulb goes off. And I think that's just it. Regardless of the level a person is at, how can you get the light bulb to go off for someone at any level? And, you know, that's another unique aspect of this career, I think, is I often talk about selling safety or, again, the light bulb effect. But a lot of it is learning people, learning how to navigate people. And, you know, you often have to come back at different people in different ways. So finding ways to get to the hearts and minds of people in all different situations with all different backgrounds, all different levels. And some days it can be frustrating because it's like, man, can't I just tell them? Can't we just say, let's do this. Here's why we're going to do this. We'll tell you why, but everybody raise their hand and say, yeah, I get it. Let's go. But it's getting people to realize on their own a lot of times, get that light bulb to go off. And sometimes they're challenging, but sometimes are It's fun when the light bulb goes off. I guess I'll put it that way.
There are certainly some Dale Carnegie principles that you were putting into practice when you were doing that. Because sometimes you have to approach the person who hasn't done the right thing. So one of the principles is use encouragement. Make the fault seem easy to correct. Along with that, sometimes you have to, one of the principles is let the other person save face. You don't want to embarrass and wound the ego, so you want to get your
Absolutely.
Point across. And then even another one that we get to put in practice is the one that says, praise the slightest improvement. Praise
Absolutely.
Every improvement. So you get to see those people who at least are taking a step in the right direction. And the safety professional gets to say, I noticed.
Absolutely.
You're working toward
Absolutely.
That.
And you just made a great point, one that I had to develop over the course of my career. Probably for the first half of my career, I still, if I'm honest with myself, it's still a work in progress. But when I did anything, I wanted it to be done to perfection. And if right out the gate it couldn't be done to perfection, I felt like a failure. Now I've shifted, and I try to relay this to the EHS team that I get, you know, the pleasure to work with, is a baby step is a step. We might not be to perfection yet. We may not ever get to perfection. But don't let any progress get in the way of no progress, because we can't take it from zero to perfection. So I love that you said that.
And that's a great way. And then one other principle that you alluded to as you're trying to build people is give the other person a fine reputation to live up to. And what I heard you say is you're seeing people what they can be, not what they are just right now.
Absolutely.
But when we let them know what they can be, you're developing them in safety, but you're also developing the whole person. And that is a great way to live life.
You know, your approach, I think, for folks that are listening is unique in that with all of the new advent around psychological safety, it's always been an undercurrent, but it hasn't been a focus. And so if you rewind your career, if you've been in the field for a while, you remember compliance, 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 compliance. Look at a check sheet, compare it. Now we're moving into, I would call, like the emotional intelligence
right.
component. And Shelly, talk a little bit to the audience around how that approach actually can fast forward your progress versus just coming at things with a compliance checklist.
And I've had several times that life has happened to me. And I feel like through some personal experiences that I've had, when life happened, it made me really analyze, you know, where I was, what I valued, who I wanted to be, and what was most important to me. And I think when you go through that exercise of really determining what do you value, what's most important to you, and in your day-to-day, where, you know, the reality is we spend a lot of time at work. And so if we're not able to live our values and do what we have fun doing for the most part, but what we believe in, and then we're probably not doing ourselves the greatest service long term. So, you know, through life happening, you know, I went through that journey and realized, and was able to make some shifts to look at less black and white and more working in the gray, but more focus on the people and the human beings. And not that I didn't see people as human beings before, but I think I started to look at things differently after, again, you know, I had some very unfortunate experiences that I went through that made me realize, you know, life is more than work. And while work is important and I love it and it's super important to me, I want to be sure that we're fulfilling all different aspects for the people that we're around any moment we have to interact with them or have touch points. So I shifted things to in every interaction to make sure that I'm looking at the human and humanizing the human, I like to call it. I feel like sometimes in some industries and in some positions, we have dehumanized human beings and we need to bring back humanizing the humans, which I'm so glad that the psychological safety piece and increasing empathy and sympathy when needed. You know, I forget who said the phrase, but, you know, people won't care how much you know until they know how much you care. I forget who exactly said that.
I think
that.
Maya Angelou gets some
okay.
credit for it.
I heard it was Merle Heckman, but
great philosopher. But yeah.
But it's so true.
Now, I just have this question.
Yeah.
Do you think that the people that we work with, not the people we work for, but the people we work with, do you think they can tell when we're focused on them as a human compared to check this box, check this box?
Absolutely. At the end of the day, if your team or everybody around you realizes that you care about them as a human being and that you want to know them as a person, which that's another tactic I try to really work on is, hey, we're going to talk about all this work stuff, but let's talk about you and your family. You know, John and I always talk about our spouses and our kids and what they're doing. I want to know you as a person and your outside of work life. And then, yeah, we'll get back to this work stuff. And we're gonna nail all this work stuff. But I want to know you as a human being. Do you have pets? If we're on video, let me see your pet. I want to understand your outside of work life. And some leaders don't like to go there because I think they feel like they want to be more transactional and not have that emotional connection. But in the safety and health world, I feel like it's so important, again, to get into the hearts and the minds of everybody around you. And then you develop that relationship deeper. And then when we move into talking about true partnership and working together, it's far easier to work with folks through any type of situation, especially the tougher things to work through when you've got that relationship. When you don't know somebody on a deeper level and have the partnership or the relationship, it's far easier to just shut down, turn it off, walk away. And again, unfortunately, maybe some leaders like that aspect of just, you know, shutting that off. But I think you can never go wrong when you get to know someone on a deeper level and treat them like the person that they want to be treated. And I always kind of go back to my values and those types of things. And if I walked away tomorrow from the team, you know, would they know how I felt about them and how I cared about them? And hopefully that answer is yes. And, you know, what would they say about me? And since shifting my approach with that with people, I've actually had some of the teammates say, you're the first leader who I know first and foremost cares about me as a person. And that took me back. And it's like, well, shouldn't, you know, when you're entrusted as a leader of people, shouldn't that be what we all want? And even take out the leader of people, just people that we're interacting with. Even if you don't have direct reports, you're influencing people in every conversation that you have and have that opportunity.
One of the tools that we teach in Dale Carnegie in our leadership courses is something we call an interview, not an interview to hire, but an interview to be able to ask questions to get to know the person like you're describing. Now, Shelley, it's real easy to say, oh, I care for my people. Oh, I care. But talk can be cheap.
Absolutely.
What do you, just to clarify, what are the things that you've seen that you put into practice? We're trying to help our people that they're listening here. They're trying to make these connections. They're trying to do it, but sometimes it's hard if we're not used to it. What are some of the things that you believe you have put into action that don't just say I care, but show I care? Could you just allude to those for us?
Absolutely. And I guess I'll start by saying I realize every organization is a little bit different and every role is a little bit different. But where I work, I'm blessed to have the opportunity that, you know, we can have some flexibility and we encourage work-life integration. I like to say integration, not balance, because it's really not balancing typically. It's figuring out the best way to integrate your life with work. You know, and one of the ways that I like to demonstrate that is you know, letting my team know right away that your family comes first. And those are just the words, right? The words. With me, family comes first. I know you're going to get your job done. And if you're not getting your job done, we're going to have that conversation too. Oh, by the way, but I'm trusting you're going to get your job done and that's going to speak for itself. But I want you to always place your family first. And so there's the empty words at first, right? Because I've been in my new role for a year and a half. So they're going to have to see that through actions. And so then at that point, I've had employees who say, hey, I just wanted to let you know, or is it, actually I'll back up. Is it okay if I take time off to take my child to the doctor? And I pause and I say, first of all, you never have to let me know that again. Block off your calendar. You do what you need to do for your family. And again, I get it that every position doesn't have that same type of luxury and flexibility. So I understand that. And they say, oh, are you sure? Well, I just want to let you know. I appreciate you letting me know. I want you to take care of your family first. And by the way, do you need any support from me with any of the projects you're working on while you're going to take care of that? So I did a couple of things there. One, let them realize that I'm serious. Their family comes first. And two, how can I help them so that they don't feel the burden of needing to keep up with everything in the moment that they need to go care for their family? And what that's bred amongst our team is a team of helping each other. We all help and support each other. So the first thing I hear out of the team now is, when anyone needs to step away, how can I help you? What can I take off your plate? Do not pick up your work phone while you're away. You go focus on your family. We've got this. And then while they're away, not texting them, not calling them. And actually, I'm, again, very fortunate to work for a leader who also demonstrates those same behaviors and actions even when I slip away from them. He reinforces that with me as well. So I think, especially depending on where you are, setting the example and then following through in each and every moment is so, so important.
Rules without relationships become restrictions that generate resistance. And when people are willing to develop that relationship, that they, my boss knows me, that's good business.
Yeah, I feel
that
like I've
is
heard,
good business.
Yeah, I feel
ahead,
like
John.
I've heard that. And for those that are listening, I would just say where this shows up is the difference between good performance and great performance.
Yes.
And it's discretionary effort. And so that discretionary effort is the difference maker between those two pieces. And so, Shelley, as you're working through that, when folks understand that you have a vested stake in them, both personally and professionally, how does that show up in discretionary effort?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and what I've seen is that performance moving from good to great. What I've also seen is people having fun at work again. It feels more like a family. I know some people hate to say like we are family. Some people will cringe at that, but it feels more like a family. The team gets along together better. Again, it's easier to laugh and do the fun things together while still getting the hard work done. I've found that it makes the harder projects easier because we can have more open communication. We know where each other's coming from. We can then also challenge and push each other a little bit more. And it breaks down those barriers as well. So when we need to professionally and politely challenge and push each other, we're not mad at each other. We don't hate each other. We're not talking about each other behind each other's backs because we know each other and we've got that relationship. So it helps in that way as well.
So if you're in your career and you're at an organization where it doesn't appear that this is going to be the path forward for your leader, your leadership team, and you've put in the effort, you know, Shelley, you and I have talked in the past and share with the audience around maybe it's time for an evaluation or a change. And for those folks that are in their career at this point, they're saying, you know, I've tried those things and it just doesn't feel like the needle's moving at all. How do you calibrate towards maybe some decision making in a different path?
Yeah. So for me, I think it took a little bit longer than it could have or should have. I think what you have to do at some routine frequency is to have the gut check with yourself of, number one, am I still having fun? Do I feel valued where I am and in the position I am and within the company? Do I feel valued? Am I having fun? And, does this seem like work? Am I being challenged? And when you check those three things, hopefully the answer is yes. And hopefully you feel like, you know, I'm doing great. I'm in a position where I can still grow. However, if you realize you've lost your joy, it's not fun coming to work anymore. You know all there is. You could, I say, you know, I realized back in the day, I would say, I can do this job with my eyes shut, which then later sent the message to me, I'm not growing in this moment right now. And I'm not having as much fun as I used to. I love the people around me, but I'm not being challenged. And so then ultimately, you know, I got the courage to leave and try something new. And after I took that courageous step to go try something new, still in the safety and health world, but I left the company that I had loved and had spent 2 decades with, so it was really scary, I found my joy again. And actually, it was John. I was at my new organization a few months in, and he said, I forget the exact words, but I think you said, your spark is back.
For the folks who are listening to this, who do lead other people, to know their people well enough to when they can sense the eyes are not shining like they used to, or the spark is not there, or there's something, and be willing to have that kind of discussion and be willing to say, let's talk about, is there something you see within this realm that you'd like to do, or I'll help you find something that would stretch. Because I think there's some good people that end up leaving us that because the leader wasn't alert enough to know them well enough.
Absolutely.
The people didn't have any choice but to say, I got to go.
Yeah. And I think they say people leave.
Or they
leave,
stay and they're unhappy.
Yeah. And is it, I think the cliche is people leave the boss, not the job.
Always.
Right? And that's usually how that sets up. What are some practical tips? You've covered, you know, what that interaction looks like with the folks. But as you are morphing into this employee engagement, team engagement, craft engagement across, what are some practical tips that you can share if somebody's trying to get something like that started in their organization, that kind of moving from a compliance to a caring organization?
One of the first pieces of advice I think is to just show up. Being in person with people has so much value. And I know that's been tough ever since COVID happened. I feel like we're, in a lot of cases, behind the keyboard even more. So taking the time to invest in being in the same room as the people has so much value. And it has value regardless of the level that you are. Ranging from an executive who decides to show up with their people to learn in the field, not just to do industrial sightseeing, but to truly go out in the field and learn from the experts that are doing the work, to the mid-level, again, showing up, being there in person, shows them that you're willing to take your precious time to be with them and to invest with them. And then not just have it be a one and done, but be intentional, especially with the team that directly reports to you, having routine conversations, routine visits, routine ways to interact as a team and one-on-one. And also, again, not just having those conversations to talk about work, but also to just talk. And even if it's virtually with a cup of coffee and chatting. But back to your question about how can you have some of those tougher conversations to get it started? It takes courage and it takes practice. The more you do it, the easier that gets as well. But still sometimes I still get a pit in my stomach a little bit every time I'm having that conversation, even though I know it's in the interest of helping people. You got to stick your neck out there and do it for the betterment of them. And I do always like to start with the honest evaluation. Hey, I see how much potential you have and how much room you have to grow. You know, it seems like to me, maybe things are getting a little bit stale and dry. And how do you feel about my comment about that? And let them open up. Sometimes they have the same realization. Sometimes they might say, stale and dry. What do you mean by that? And then you can explain.
And I think the way you said that, it just seems to me, it's like not just saying,
you're not,
dude, something is wrong with you. You're dry as a.
Yeah. Or what's wrong? What's wrong? You don't seem like yourself. That also immediately puts.
And that's a Carnegie principle, to begin in a friendly way. Don't go in guns blazing at people.
Absolutely.
But that starts it off.
Yeah.
That's important.
And then I talk about, have the conversation with them about switching to the care perspective of, you know, I see how much potential you have and how much you can continue to grow and develop. So I want to be sure that you are focusing on tasks and activities and projects, number one, that you do care about and have a passion about, but also that can help you to grow in a variety of different ways. And that might be in their safety and health skill sets. That might be in executive presence. That might be in public speaking. That might be in project management. And that's where I think you have to be close enough to the people that directly report to you, if you're a leader of people, to analyze and understand those skills, those strengths, those weaknesses, and then also have the wheels turning for each one individually, how you can keep developing them to keep growing into their best. And that's something that's really important to me, is not just checking our safety and health goals as an organization, but being intentional about developing each person uniquely and meeting them where they are.
So if you are a company and you're seeing this industrial sightseeing, how can we move into this learning component? So talk a little bit about
absolutely. That. So industrial sightseeing is largely when leaders or executives in particular come to the site where the work's taking place. The work often stops. They stand around, pictures get taken, and then they go on their way. And it's on LinkedIn or wherever of, I went to the site, I was present with my people, and then I went on my way. So industrial sightseeing, I came, I saw, I left. But did I learn? So I think there's a way to combine both, and that's the second piece. It's so important to have that presence in the field where the work is taking place and where the experts are doing the work, who have that operational experience, that unique operational experience. So when the leaders at any level come out there, what types of questions are you asking? And I think often I've had conversations with executives who say, well, I don't know the work. I don't know the technical side. And I say, that's okay. Let me give you these three questions that anybody could ask when you go out there. And it can be questions like, what is the greatest thing that could cause harm to you out here? You can ask that on any job. What is your greatest hazard out here? What are you most concerned about on this job? What would cause you out here to stop work? What is one thing you would change about this job? Simple questions that you can apply to absolutely any job task anywhere you go.
Think what that means to those people. I mean, I've had people that were like work construction sites, and a CEO called one of them and just said, hey, I'd like a cup of coffee with you. I want to talk to you. And the guy thought, oh no, I'm done. But the CEO said, I've been thinking about this project. You've been around for a while. What's your take on it? What's your take? And the guy got to tell him, and that was like one of the joys of his life.
And he went back home and he told his wife, and he said, I can't believe what happened to me today. And it's almost transformative.
Yep.
Where that individual that was solicited has a completely different perspective, and their willingness to give discretionary effort
absolutely
goes off the charts.
And the next time that a different employee that works with this guy says, oh, that big guy up there, yeah. He says,
wait a minute.
And the ripple effect of that. So what you're talking about here is vital.
Absolutely. And it lights that spark again for that individual in both ways. The executive or whomever gets that awesome information, and the spark is relit, and how that makes that person feel valued in the organization. So it's at all levels. Again, the value of relationships, and that it takes time. That, you know, we're kind of making it sound really easy right now. It's an investment, and it takes time, and you have to be intentional.
When Carnegie said, become genuinely interested in the other person, that genuinely interested goes a long ways. So, Shelley, you've had some experience in your life, and there are people at all different levels that are listening here. And we're always especially in tune with those who are up and coming, who want to get better. And if you could think of a piece of advice that you would give to folks that are listening as they're looking to grow a career? What would be something that either somebody told you or you just thought, I wish somebody had told me, that would be an encouragement to folks?
Yeah, a few things. Number one, don't take any actions that you wouldn't want to read about on the front page of the newspaper, which I know there aren't many newspapers left, but a former leader of mine always told me that. Number two, never be the smartest person in the room if you can avoid it. Find folks to be around, to hang out around, to connect with, have phone calls with, drop emails with, go visit, who you can learn from. Maybe it's people in positions that you aspire to be in one day. You know, find an accountability partner would be the third one. You may have blinders on to some behaviors or aspects that you can't identify yourself. So find a strong accountability partner that you can check in with that's going to be honest and open with you and help you grow and develop. So don't be the smartest. Find some mentors, basically, and have an accountability partner.
And Shelley, thank you for giving your time and your effort and you letting us and our listeners draw from your experiences to help us.
It's been a pleasure to be here. It's an awesome experience. Thanks for having me.
Good. Thank you.
Thank you.
John Shelley is a longtime friend of yours, and you all have been building and encouraging each other. So we're really glad she could be a part. I have a page full of notes, but one thing that really stood out that she said early on that applies to all of us, legacy. What legacy are we building? What image, reflection are we leaving in the minds of the people that we come in contact with? What a way of life for a safety professional to live.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think for me, you know, it just continues to reemphasize our profession, and she said it a few times, like over and over, helping others. Doctor, safety professional, how are we helping others? And so when I think about legacy in terms of Shelley, it's really about helping.
And when the safety professional realizes this isn't the checking the box profession, it's the way that I get to help the individuals who are part of this organization. Great purpose of life.
Yeah, absolutely.
Thanks for listening to My Big Safety Challenge, a podcast produced in partnership by Dale Carnegie and BCSP, with your host, Dale Carnegie Master Trainer Merle Heckman, and John Fisher, Director of Environmental Strategy and Corporate EHS at Duke Energy Corporation. Executive produced by Joel Bergai. Directed by Giachi Liu. Edited by Jared Brio and Kyla Anderson. Editorial support from Brandon Mohaupt. Social media support from Braylon Morgan. Consulting producers are Colin Brown and Mark Sullivan. To have new episodes delivered directly to you, please subscribe on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or wherever fine podcasts are downloaded. If you'd like to share your story of a safety leadership challenge you faced, email us at info@mybigsafetychallenge.com. See you next time.